Hey everybody, this is the Drive On Podcast, where we talk about issues affecting veterans after they get out of the military. I'm your host, Scott DeLuzio, and now, let's get on with the show. On January 15th, 2009, U.S. Airways Flight 1549 took off from New York City's LaGuardia Airport. On board were 155 passengers and crew. The pilot on this flight was an expert pilot and an aviation safety expert. At that point in his career, he logged nearly 20,000 flight hours and served in the U.S. Air Force prior to his civilian pilot career. About 2 minutes into this flight, the plane unexpectedly struck a flock of geese. This incident caused both engines to lose power. And at the time, given the plane's low altitude, shortly after taking off, the lack of engine power, and the distance to nearby airports, the pilots realized that they were unable to steer the plane back for a safe landing. Instead, the only option they really had was to ditch the plane. They ditched it in the Hudson River. Now, all passengers and crew survived this landing after being rescued by nearby boats. The landing was referred to as the Miracle on the Hudson, and you may recall this story from the news at the time, which certainly it was a great story. It also later was made into a movie called Sully, named after the pilot who expertly glided the plane and its precious cargo back to safety. Now, the pilot and crew on this flight didn't survive by panicking, by pointing fingers, calling names, playing that blame game that we oftentimes do. Now, that wouldn't have helped the situation. The plane was going down regardless of whose fault it was. And oh yeah, by the way, there's not really much they could have done to avoid flying into a flock of geese. They survived by relying on their training. They were prepared, right? The flight attendants ensured that all passengers had their seatbelt on and that they assumed that crash position. The flight attendants got themselves back and buckled into their seats. They made sure that all of the drink carts and the tray tables were up and were secured and all that stuff. They made sure all that stuff took place. Now, think about it. The plane took off, and about 2 minutes after taking off, it hit that flock of geese. Not very long after hitting that flock of geese, the plane was floating in the Hudson River. These flight attendants didn't exactly have a lot of time to prepare for this. Now, sure, a lot of the preparation was done for them ahead of time. The tray tables were up because that's the way they need to be when you take off on any flight. The drink carts are locked away because that's where they need to be. The passengers are already buckled in their seats because that's what you need to do when you take off on a flight. But they were prepared. These things were already done ahead of time. They didn't need to physically lock up those drink carts or tell passengers to put their tray tables up, because a lot of times these types of accidents happen shortly after takeoff. And so in order to be prepared for this, they come around and they tell you, put your tray tables up, put your seat back up, make sure all the overhead bins are closed, make sure all your baggage is put away and tucked under your seat and things like that. They don't do that because they want to be a pain in your butt. They do that because they want to prepare for incidents like this. And sure, these incidents are rare. They don't really happen all that often, but when they do, being prepared like this saves lives. And in this situation, it saved every life on that plane. Everyone got off that plane and survived. The pilot on that flight was also a glider pilot, which, while I'm no aviation expert, I would imagine flying a glider is similar to flying a commercial airliner with no engines, or no engine power anyways. He also, as I mentioned before, served in the U.S. Air Force as a pilot. And so he's trained for situations like this, no matter how unlikely they may seem. No one expected that day to take off and hit a flock of geese and end up in the Hudson River. I don't know anybody who would have gotten on that flight if they knew that that was what was going to happen. They were planning on going to wherever their destination was. Maybe it was home. Maybe it was their job that was taking them someplace. They had a destination in mind, and it was not the Hudson River. But the pilot and the crew prepared, and they did what they needed to make the best of that terrible situation. They couldn't turn the plane around and fly it back to the airport. Doing so would have put in danger the lives of everybody on the ground between where they hit that flock of geese and the airport. We all know what a plane full of fuel can do to the New York City skyline. On September 11th, they clearly were able to destroy buildings and kill many, many people. By the pilots making that decision to land in the river, not only did they save all the lives of the people on the plane, they saved the lives of all the people on the ground between there and the airport. So they made a very difficult decision in a very short amount of time, but they did so because they were prepared. When I was a kid, my dad taught me how to play baseball. And he'd tell me that whenever I was in the field, no matter which position I was playing, whether I was the catcher, whether I was in the outfield, whether I was shortstop, second base, whatever position I was playing, he'd always tell me to ask myself the question, if the ball's hit to me, what should I do with it? And think about it. It makes a lot of sense. That way, if the ball is hit to me, I'm not standing there holding the ball, trying to now analyze the situation and figure out where the ball needs to be thrown. If I figure this out before the pitch is even thrown, I know where all the runners are. I know my own throwing ability, so I know how far I'll be able to throw. So if I'm far out in the outfield, I'll know, am I going to be able to make it to second base? Am I going to need to throw it to a cutoff man? Am I going to need to throw it to a different base or whatever, based on the distance that we're trying to cover? So by asking myself that question every single time, I'm prepared. I know what I'm going to do. I don't even have to think about it. I catch the ball, whether it's in the air or on the ground, and I throw it to where I'm supposed to throw it because I've already figured that part out. I don't have to stop and figure that out all over again, you know, just because the ball came to me. So I'm already prepared in that situation. And it makes a lot of sense to do this in your daily life. I mean, think about even just a self-defense perspective, right? A lot of times people think, oh, I don't need to learn self-defense or martial arts or arm myself with firearm or mace or anything like that. I live in a nice neighborhood. I live in a good city or a good town. Everybody knows each other. I'm going to be fine. I don't need to learn how to defend myself, right? And they are, and they're right all the time. They're right about that until they're not. You can't learn martial arts when someone's in the middle of attacking you, right? You're not going to magically find a mace in your pocket in the middle of an attack. Even if you do carry mace or a firearm for protection, if you've never practiced with it, how do you know you'll be able to do what you need to do when you really need it? How do you know that you're going to be able to turn the safety off the right way on it and be able to spray the mace in the right direction? How do you know you're going to be able to draw the pistol from your holster and shoot the attacker without practicing? How do you know you'll be able to do it? Shooting at a piece of paper, by the way, is a heck of a lot different than a moving target. So you kind of have to practice these things until it becomes second nature. Practice taking the mace out of your pocket or out of your purse or out of wherever it is on your keychain or something. Practice martial arts or some other self-defense tactics. Practice these things until they become second nature. Until they're so ingrained in you that it becomes like muscle memory. All that training is critical to surviving an attack. That training that you do, that repetition helps you survive that situation. That repetition of always asking myself, what am I going to do with the ball when it comes to me in baseball, help our team win games. Because if I was to stand there with the baseball in my hand and not throw it or not, run to a base and tag it, or whatever the case may be, the runners would keep advancing and they'd eventually score more runs, right? So you have to be prepared. In the military, we practice the most basic battle drills over and over again until we could do them in our sleep, and it was boring. It was tedious. But you knew that any one of the guys in your unit would be able to flank the enemy or breach a building at a moment's notice if they needed to. And that training, that repetition, that muscle memory with these drills is what made us prepared and kept us safe when we actually had to do them for real, in real life, you know, in a combat type of situation. What about the other unexpected situations in your life? You know, a lot of times we rely on technology to keep us safe. Cars have those blind spot sensors that beep or flash whenever another car is in your blind spot. Or they have like low tire pressure indicators and a lot of other like convenient bells and whistle type things that make driving a car much easier and, quite frankly, a lot safer. But what happens when those sensors break? What happens when that blind spot sensor stops working, stops sensing that there's a car nearby? Or maybe that car zoomed in too quick and you didn't happen to notice it. Do you still check your blind spot? Do you check your tire pressure on a regular basis? By doing those things, you're preparing yourself for that off chance that one of those sensors isn't working the way it should be. You're preparing yourself so that way, should you happen to see someone in your blind spot and that sensor doesn't go off, you know you need to take your car in for a repair to have that sensor checked. You know that if you check your tire pressure and the tires are super low on air, but the sensor isn't going off, you know that sensor's not working and you need to get that fixed. So it's part of being prepared. It's part of not taking things for granted, that things are just going to work the way they're supposed to. The pilot who was flying that plane over the Hudson could have taken off and just expected that his engines are going to work the way they're supposed to for the duration of the flight. Had he done that 2 minutes into the flight when they stopped working, he would have panicked and not known what to do with the plane. Maybe he would have tried to bring it back to the airport. And in doing so, he might have crashed in the middle of the city somewhere. There's a quote by Ben Franklin that I only just recently heard for the first time, but it's obviously an older quote. The quote is, "By failing to prepare, you are preparing to fail." And it makes a lot of sense that if you don't take that time to plan for things that are unexpected, those unexpected events, when they eventually do happen, are going to make you fail. You're not going to know how to react. You won't know which base to throw the baseball to. You won't know that there are alternatives to an airport for landing up your plane, right? And now, obviously, these things are not the things that we're talking about for your everyday life. But think about how often in our everyday life we're unprepared. You know, you never expect an interviewer at your job interview to ask certain questions. And so maybe you didn't prepare a good answer. And you might be sitting there looking kind of dumb while he's asking those questions, and you're not answering them, at least not with a good answer. You might not think that the relationship you're in will end. Maybe you think everything's great, but the other person in the relationship is having a tough time. And if you're living together, maybe you'll have to find a new place to live. Or maybe you were relying on each other for certain things, and now that person's all of a sudden out of your life. And what you were relying on them for is no longer there. You never stop and think that maybe your spouse or maybe a child would develop a life-threatening illness, especially not at young ages. And so you may not even bother getting a will or buying life insurance. And do you know that most times when you buy life insurance, the earlier you buy it in life, the cheaper it ends up being? And so if you start buying life insurance when you're 20, it's a heck of a lot cheaper than it would be when you're 50. So by doing that, you're preparing not only for your death, which may not happen for another 60, 70 years, you're preparing financially for the present by not having to spend quite as much money on this life insurance. You know that having a will drawn up actually makes life easier for your loved ones should something happen to you. It ensures that all of your assets, all of your, you know, worldly possessions, if you will, are distributed according to your wishes. And that prevents a lot of issues with the family after you're gone, right? And so, yeah, sure, it doesn't necessarily affect you, but they're still your loved ones and you still care about them and you still want to do what's right for them. And so having these things put in place before they're needed prepares them for that terrible situation that they would otherwise be left in. Life is pretty random, and there are so many things that can take us by surprise. That's why we need to be prepared for these worst-case scenarios and have a plan. You know what? Have several plans. We all know that the first plan that we have is probably not going to pan out anyways. So by having backup plans, and yes, I said plural, backup plans, you end up preparing yourself for the situations where the figurative geese take out your engine. There's a lot of benefits to being prepared. For starters, it enhances your self-discipline by enforcing a routine, right? Think about it. If you check your tire pressure every time you fill up for gas, it allows you to make sure your tires are full when you're already at a gas station where you can fill them up if they're low. And that routine, if you do that every single time you stop and fill up for gas, you know that you're probably in a much better situation than you would be if you go a month or two without checking your tire pressure. If you're just relying on that tire pressure indicator, that light that flashes on your dashboard when the tire pressure is low, you have no way of knowing whether or not that indicator is even accurate, if it's even working correctly. So check for yourself. And when you do that, you'll be sure that the tires are in good working order, and you'll get down there and you'll be able to actually even see the tires a little bit better than just in a casual glance as you're walking by your car. You might be able to notice a nail sticking out of a tire or something along those lines. And that will help to make sure that you don't have a blowout on the highway as you're driving. And that's all part of being prepared, right? So that self-discipline to do that every single time helps you create a routine. And when you have that routine in place, what you are doing is making sure that whatever thing you're checking, whatever thing you're preparing for, is in good working order before you rely on it for your own personal safety or for it to just work correctly. Being prepared also increases your happiness, or actually maybe put it a different way, it can reduce unhappiness, right? So think about it. If you're thinking about going for a hike and you just, you know, maybe bring a bottle of water with you, you're prepared for however long that bottle of water is going to last you, but you're not prepared for everything that can happen while you go out on this hike. And of course, you're not going to always be prepared for every little thing, but you should try to think ahead for, you know, what you should be prepared for, right? You might want to have a small backpack or something that you bring with you and throw like a little poncho or a small umbrella in there in case it starts to rain. Sure, it might be a little more weight to carry in this backpack, but imagine how much happier you'd be when you get back to your car and you're dry than you would be if you were coming back to the car soaking wet. Maybe you pack in there some form of communication in the event that you get injured. Maybe you trip over something, you fall down a cliff, you know, some loose rocks or whatever, and now you're stuck and you can't get out on your own, and so you need to call for help. So maybe you have a cell phone with a fully charged battery. Maybe you even have a radio if you know you're going off in a place where the cell phone service is not all that great. You might want to pack some food and extra water in there too, just in case. You know, if you fell and you broke an ankle or you got yourself pinned under a rock or something like that, and you just can't get out on your own, you might be there for a little while, right? So you might want to have some food available. You might want to have some extra water so you don't get dehydrated. It's not going to make any of that injury feel any better. So it's not going to make you happy. It's not going to increase your happiness. But you'll at least not have to suffer any more than you actually have to from whatever that injury happens to be. So it can at least reduce your unhappiness by being prepared. Being prepared also helps you become more flexible. By practicing all these different disaster scenarios that could happen while piloting a plane, the pilot realized that there may be a time where he can't land on a nice smooth runway. And with flight simulators, he can practice dishing a plane in a river. And it's that flexibility that enabled the pilot to land safely in the Hudson versus crashing into a populated area by attempting to return to the airport. So by having those multiple plans, those different layers of backup plans in your pocket that you've mentally rehearsed, you've gone over, you know what the kind of protocols are, you know what you need to do in order to kind of switch from whatever plan A is. Plan A is I'm going on a hike today and it's a nice sunny day and everything's going to be fine. Plan B is, well, didn't see that storm coming, now it's raining, I'm going to throw this poncho on. You become more flexible that way. You can now adapt to whatever the situation is without having to suffer through that situation. It also helps you develop resilience. It lets you bounce back when something unexpected happens, right? So when we've already thought about the possible scenarios, all these different scenarios that can happen, our car sensor's not working, getting injured on a hike or whatever, our minds are already thinking about how to handle these situations. We're not shocked when these things occur because we already know how to handle them. And even if something happens that we aren't 100% prepared for, we still likely have a plan that helps us deal with the situation. Let's say you're on that hike and a boulder falls and blocks the trail that you're hiking on, right? So you're stuck and you can't safely get around it. So you're stuck on this trail and you can't go back for some reason. You can't go forward and continue to safety. But fortunately, you packed a radio or a cell phone or whatever, and so you now have a way to communicate in order to get help. Your initial plan might have been, well, what happens if I get hurt? I'm going to have a radio. I'm going to have a fully charged cell phone so I can call for help if I get hurt. That injury never really technically occurred. You're not injured, but you're also unable to get out of whatever that situation is. You're not able to get around that boulder. You also packed your food and water, so you don't get hungry or get dehydrated while you're stuck there, right? So if someone's coming to rescue you, it might take them a little time to get to you. You didn't plan for a boulder blocking the path, but you're prepared to withstand the situation. So take some time to look at your daily life, your morning and evening commute. Do you normally drive on the back roads where you don't get a great cell phone signal? Maybe try going a slightly longer route where you get a better signal in case your car breaks down. You know, your work day. Did you research the company that you're pitching your services to? Do you really know what all their needs are? And do you have an answer for whether or not your company is the best fit to solve whatever those needs happen to be? Consider each thing you do throughout the day and look to see how well prepared you are if the worst case scenario should happen. Thanks for listening to the Drive On Podcast. If you want to check out more episodes or learn more about the show, you can visit our website, driveonpodcast.com, or on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Drive On Podcast.